Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Reel Down. We're here with another week. We did not have anything last week. I had a couple funerals to go to, so unfortunately, I wasn't able to get a show out to you guys. But we got a pretty good one this week. We got Mr. Stormy over here, who recently took home the championship for the Hobie series, the Hobie TOC, coveted TOC trophy. So glad to have him on tonight. Brady, how you doing?
I'm good. What's up, man?
Oh, nothing much. Just living the life. So tell me a little bit about yourself, and how did you get into kayak fishing, and or how'd you get started in fishing in general?
Yeah, so I've been fishing literally my whole life. I started going out walleye fishing with my grandpa probably when I was like 2 or 3. And I've just always loved being around the water and catching fish. But I actually live up here in Nebraska, and I always joke with people and I tell them I'm from middle of a cornfield, Nebraska, because that's about all we have up here. Yeah. So the fishing opportunities are kind of few, at least compared to down south. But if you work at it a little bit, you can find some really good fish up here.
Isn't Ben Milliken from Nebraska too? I remember watching some of his early videos, and when he still lived in Nebraska, and watching some of his content he was pumping out from out there. It looks like there's some decent places, at least like close by, that you can get to that have some pretty good opportunities.
Yeah, for sure.
You're not too far from like Missouri and some of those lakes, like Table Rock.
Kansas is really good too.
Yeah. That's cool, man. So how about tournament fishing? How did you get your start in tournament fishing?
Well, I had this high school friend named Josh, and we were actually in junior high. He came across this guy who goes by the name of Kayak Jack. His name's Marty Hughes. He's from Nebraska. And we kind of started looking into what he was doing. He was putting on these kayak fishing tournaments. And so my friend and I both had kayaks, and we started doing these youth events in Nebraska when we were junior high age. So probably, you know, what, 12 to 14, I don't even know. But so we'd have to have like my mom go with us and paddle with us. because we were minors, so
Yeah. You had to have some kind of, I think
guardian.
where they rule it is like you have to have some kind of supervision on the
Yeah.
water, like an eight, someone
Thankfully, they've
18 or
kind
up.
of gotten away from that. Now you can just like fill out a form, which is cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how we started doing like multi-species tournaments, youth tournaments, and just fell in love with it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you, how long have you been kayak fishing for then? Like,
Probably about like 8 to 10 years ish, maybe ten
that's
years.
pretty good.
Tournament fishing, maybe like 8 years. So
Yeah.
yeah, I've definitely been around it for a while. It's been pretty cool meeting all these different people all over the country.
Yeah, no doubt. So getting moving on to, I guess, this event. Did you get a chance to pre-fish for this event, or do you have any history on Lake Chickamauga? I think this may be like the fourth tournament this year, I think we've covered on Chick. It seems like it was pretty popular. This the Chick in Gunnersville seemed like they were very popular this year. But do you have any history going back on Chick, or you kind of
Yeah,
have to learn it as you go?
I've been on Chick one other time, and
Yeah.
it was actually during the same time of the year. It was that Bassmaster tournament there, the first year that Bassmaster had their kayak series.
Yeah.
So that was like late November. So it's very similar to the same pool level as it was back then, which
Yeah.
helped out a lot. But I've tried to kind of steer clear of the national tournaments to go to like Gunnersville and Chickamauga just because I don't really care to fish around a whole bunch of boats all the time. But it's
There's
really
a
cool
lot of
to,
boats. There's a lot of guys out here that have a lot of experience on those waters, and I feel like you got to know those waters pretty well most of the time.
Yeah,
Like,
you usually have to end up doing something pretty funky to get the extra couple bites in order to like win tournaments or even getting the money. So that's kind of cool, kind of getting out of your comfort zone of what you are used to doing in fishing and having to really be dialed in to what's going on. So
yeah.
that it's th they're fun for those reasons.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And I feel like, I mean, not necessarily every time an event comes to like Chick or Gunnersville that a local wins it, but it's usually like somebody that's local-ish to it does really well, like first or second, and then I know a guy that's not local that comes in with some sort of different approach that maybe everybody else isn't really thinking about. That ends up either winning it or placing really well.
Yeah, I find just even fishing around here when I take one of my buddies out that doesn't fish my waters, they'll end up fishing an area that I just kind of have neglected because I fish it so often, haven't done that great. And then
Yeah.
there seems to be a bite where it gets neglected every once in a while. So I
Yeah.
see people getting good finishes in tournaments doing what you just said.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. Well, that's pretty cool. So what do you do? What did you do as far as like practice for this event? Did you have a couple days? They had a practice window, right? Were
Yeah, I
you
think it
able to
was
take
like
advantage of
4 days.
the window, or?
Yep.
Okay,
Yeah, I got
cool.
out there all 4 days of the official practice, so it was off limits for like a month or something before that.
Yeah.
And so I got out there all 4 days. Just did a lot of running with my motor. I have the a motor guide bow mount, and so I did a lot of putzing around with that, changing ramps. Just looking at what everything looked like rather than just going down the bank and fishing real hard. So that's I kind of just did more scouting than fishing and practice.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that's kind of typically the better way to approach practice, other than, I mean, the alternative is that you're hooking all the fish that you're going to be hopefully trying to catch, and then they don't want to, then they don't want to bite or commit then the next time.
Yep. Yeah, you're just making it harder on yourself. if you're catching too many fish, I think.
Yeah, especially if you're like throwing some sort of presentation that you're gonna try to throw during the tournament, and then you just kind of educate this fish to what you're already throwing. So,
One thing that I really like about like weather systems moving in for the tournament, which is what we had at this tournament, is
yeah, go definitely go into that. I was curious about
that,
that. I live
I
not too
like,
far from Chig. I mean, I live in Nashville, so it's
yeah, I
I got
like
to
that
experience it.
because you can, like in practice, you can catch a few more fish and not really affect your fish too bad for the tournament because it's
Yeah.
going to be kind of a different bite.
Yeah.
So I did, like when I would find some fish, I'd catch quite a few fish there just to try to see what kind of size there was. And then, kind of expand on that area where I found some fish to try to like find more areas close by that'd be an
Yeah.
easy pedal.
Yeah,
But
yeah. It didn't seem like there's a whole lot of like quality fish caught this go around, which is kind of what I typically expect from a Tennessee River event in the fall. It's like it's a lot of the mid-size range fish, and you may get like one good one a day kind of thing.
Yeah,
And then,
when
I
they're,
mean, this will be kind of later fall, I guess, like
yeah,
mid to full-blown fall, I guess.
when they're on that little bait really hard, like they were in this tournament, and how they get in the fall, just that little teeny tiny
Yeah.
bait,
Yeah.
those big fish are definitely up there and around it, but there's just so much for them to eat that it makes it really tough to get those. Get the bigger ones to bite.
Like you're having to weed through all the little ones
Yeah.
first. I mean, 'cause they usually will only be biting smaller presentations, right? 'Cause you're feeding on the smaller bait fish. I mean, you might be able to trick them into something else, but
Yeah, they're so keyed in on that, on the color hues of the shad and that size of it. So
yeah.
throwing something downsized in the fall, you can actually catch you really big fish where it doesn't typically work that way the other times of the year.
Yeah. And so yeah, but you'll also be able to be catching a lot of the little fish and white bass and
Yeah.
everything else in the lake.
Dude,
I
I caught some massive drum
was gonna
down
say the drum is what I always run into trying to fish the shad and stuff and on the Tennessee River.
there.
Like Watts Bar is probably the worst place for it in the fall. I'll go out there like in fish shad balls and just drop like a blade bait or something through it, and every time it's like as soon as it hits the bottom it's just bunk. And it's a giant drum or blue cats. I don't know why, but tons of blue cats doing
Yeah,
that.
catfish love those blade baits.
So what were you looking for coming into this event? Like you had a pretty good idea that's going to be fall patterns, or what kind of areas per se were you going to try to focus your time in, and like what kind of patterns were you going to try to develop?
I was looking for some areas that had some shallow grass that was had some deep water access nearby. So like up in the river, that's pretty much the whole thing in the river is there's
Yeah, like from
grass along the
basically like
whole river.
Hiwassee Island north, that whole region.
It's just shallow grass on the bank drops off to 10 foot. I mean, it's perfect for that
Yeah.
scenario. So I like that kind of, grass mixed in with some wood, by the deep water with the shad up in it. I really like, what you can do there, throwing frogs and jerk baits and spinner baits. So I
Yeah.
always try to look for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Did you watch the Bassmaster Elites footage from a couple years ago when they went out there, and I think it was the last weekend of October?
Yeah, I watched that whole tournament pretty close.
Yeah. That was pretty close to what Lee Livesey was doing. Was that grass that's like kind of out towards the main. Well, that's got like closer deep water by it. So were you seeing like grass mats and stuff like that from that event? Like in that event, they had topped out grass everywhere, and then you had the bright green spots they were looking for in the grass. Some guys were doing other stuff, but is that kind of what you were seeing during this event?
Actually, the grass, for whatever reason, is not nearly what it usually is in previous years. So, some people always get kind of bent out of shape when the grass is dead or there's not much grass or whatever. But actually, when there's less grass, that means that the fish that want to be in the grass are going to be more concentrated. So that's what I found is that when I would get in an area that had fish in the grass, you wouldn't have to move very much at all because they didn't have anywhere else to go to be in the grass.
So going through practice, did you have a couple of areas that you had found that you felt like could produce for you during the tournament, or do you have some pretty good confidence going into day one, or did you have a pretty good game plan figured out?
I knew that I was I was fishing for schoolers in the backs of pockets initially in the beginning of practice or in the beginning of the tournament. And I knew that there were bigger fish around because you could see like 3 and 4 pounders come up every once in a while and eat the bait, whereas most of the fish I was catching back there were between 12 to 16 inches. So I knew that I was around them at least. I was confident that I was around bigger fish, but I was kind of just leaving it for the tournament to figure out how to catch those bigger fish. And the place that I started seemed to have a better average of bigger fish than the other backs of pockets I had found for whatever reason. I'm not exactly sure why. So that's kind of how I picked that. The back of that pocket rather than just any random one.
So I guess going through your day one, how did day one go for you? It looks like you had a pretty decent day.
Yeah, I
Think
was
there
sitting in
was.
like seventh after day one with like 82.5 inches. So I was just missing that kicker that everyone else up there at the top got. So I felt pretty good about what I did on day one, especially after not really being able to figure out how to catch those bigger fish in practice on those schooling fish. So I caught a 17-incher off a dock like 5 minutes into the tournament on day one on a spinnerbait. And then I kind of expanded on my area later in the day because I had culled up to about 79 inches. And I thought that's going to be a pretty respectable bag for today. And it'll definitely get me to tomorrow to be able to go catch them pretty good the next day. So I started expanding on my area, ran to the back of another pocket that had grass in it, and ended up catching like another 17 and an 18 incher. And really made my bag into a bag that would put me into contention to win for the next 2 days.
As long, I mean, really, if you stayed around that 80-inch mark every day, it seemed like you'd keep yourself in contention.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911, and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
What does 80 inches get you in this? Yeah, I mean, 80 inches, Russ said 80 and a half inches the first day.
Yep.
Yeah, Caven, there's a lot of guys with that around that 80 inch mark that were in contention still on day three.
Well, there were so many of those giant fish being caught.
Yeah,
you could have 80 inches for 2 days and then go crack 100 and have a shot to win, you know.
Yeah,
you just had to like get into an area where the big schoolers were firing rather than just those 16 inchers.
Yeah, for sure. So what were you doing like in the grass as far as like how were you fishing the grass? I mean, you don't have to tell me specifically how you're doing it, but like just a general idea.
Mm-hmm. All practice, I was only able to really consistently catch the schooling fish with a jerk bait, and mm-hmm. I used the Berkeley Stunna from
Missouri.
And yeah. So what I would do when I would get around the grass specifically is make a little bit shorter cast and then keep my rod tip pointed up and work the bait like with my rod tip up.
Keep it up out of the grass.
Yeah. Because then
so were you fishing it. Like submerged grass that wasn't quite mm-hmm. topped out? Okay.
On day one and two I was. On day three I was fishing more mats. But
okay.
Yeah, and then to keep it above that grass you had to work your rod tip up. And then I was also throwing a frog, and I don't have the spinner. Oh yeah, I have the spinner here. You'd throw the frog out there over the grass with mm-hmm. the spinner on it and work it really slow, and it'd kind of mimic a dying bait fish on top of the water.
Yeah,
and you could trick them into eating that as well.
What frog is that?
That's a Jackal Cara.
The Kyra, what are, the little one?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a littler frog, so it kind of matches the size of the bait fish.
And yeah, that's one of my favorite frogs.
Yeah.
I use that frog a lot on Gunnersville and Chick, actually.
How is your hookup ratio on the Kara?
I wouldn't say that it's, like, perfect, but it's decent. It seems that the bigger fish are the ones that I have issues hooking up with. It's mm-hmm. the smaller ones that I can catch almost every time. But mm-hmm.
There's when the big fish inhale it, you think about that. It's just a big circle in there, and there's not much to grab onto.
Yeah, and it's such a little frog that it, like, mm-hmm. doesn't – it can just, like, you pull it straight out of their mouth just about.
So for the people that are watching, you can see how the – hooks are super pointed in on this frog.
Yeah.
And what I do on this frog is I take my pliers and I turn the hooks so that they're parallel with the body of the frog. And then I also pull them out just a little bit, like so that the tip is up. And then I hook the big fish really well.
Okay.
It's more like a fluke hook then. Where yeah. The hook is pointing above the eyelet, and then it can grab a lot better. But other than that, it's for me, I kind of have that same problem where it's hard to hook them.
Yeah. Yeah. I've definitely lost like a couple of big fish that have cost me some money on that little frog.
Mm-hmm.
But I have so much confidence in getting bites with it because I almost kind of view it like a finesse version of frog fishing, if that makes any sense. I can go behind people with that smaller frog and get more bites that they're missing.
For sure.
Especially like on the Tennessee River where you got tons of that little shad everywhere. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times that's what they're eating is around the grass and stuff too. that and little bluegill and stuff. But that's, I'm gonna have to try that out on my on mine, see if that helps any with my hookup ratios.
Yeah, I've tried doing that with other brands of frogs like Spro and different things, and when you bend the hooks out on those, it seems like you get snagged in the grass really bad.
Yeah.
But for this one, it doesn't seem like you have that problem near as much. I'm not sure what the difference is. This one sits like belly down in the water almost all the time. So I think that is what helps a lot.
Yeah. It's an awesome, that's an awesome frog. That's like, I got like two favorite frogs, and that's like my top, one of my top two. The other one is the scum frog. The launch frog, that one I've probably got like a 95% hookup ratio on, but it's really hard to fish that frog around, like any kind of pads or, anything that you have to like pull it through. It's really good mat frog, but, anything where you have to like pull it through it, cause it's such a soft frog that it just it immediately hooks into stuff. But
does Jackal have a bigger version of that Kara?
You know, I'm not sure if they do or not. Let me look. Let me try to see if I can pull it up real quick. I know they make a pretty good plethora of frogs. I don't think they got it. I think that that one is specifically like a smaller, they're smaller. Let me just pull up Jackal. Savage Gear has one that's almost exactly like it. Yes, I just saw it on here.
I never cared for Savage Gear's hooks that much.
Yeah, I can't say that I've used use their stuff very often. Let's see.
I'm not sure what the Jackal ones have for hooks, but they are like legit.
Yeah. They've got the Gavacho. They have the Kyra. They have the Kyra S2. Is that what you were using with the blade on the back?
The S2 beat, yep.
Yeah, the S2 beat, huh. Yeah, that's a cool frog. And I don't think they make any other sizes of it. I thought they had other... Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking of. The PQPQ. That's another one that could maybe imitate that small bait. I think that's what it was designed for.
Yeah, I get a little flash in there. Don't see that on a frog too often. So I think that... when you have a bunch of boat pressure and stuff, doing something subtle like that can really get you a couple more bites.
Yeah. I played around a little bit with some of the Tekel frogs that have similar stuff on the back of them. Like, I think they make one that has basically two little, they look like little flippers that are little silver flippers on the back. And they make another one that's kind of almost the same as this S2, but this one looks a little bit more finessey than that one does.
Have you ever thrown the Optimum Baits Furbit frog?
I don't think so. Is that the one with the rabbit tail on it? I think Depps has one that's the same, or they used to. I guess Depps not really around anymore, but it's kind of the same thing. It has a little tiny rabbit fur tail sticking out the back.
Yeah.
I haven't thrown the Optimum Baits one though. Is it pretty good?
I haven't thrown it a whole bunch. The body's super, super soft, like your scum frog you're talking about. And I'm pretty sure that it's Optimum Baits. You'd have to double check that. But I've only thrown it a handful of times, and the hookup ratios are phenomenal, but the bodies are so soft that it's really snaggy. So
yeah,
I think it's a little better in like open water or around wood or something rather than like in a mat.
Oh, so they got a poppin' frog version of it. Okay, so this one's got a long, pretty long tail, that furbit one that you're talking about. Yeah, the depths one I'm thinking of has a really short little tail on the back of it. But it's kind of the same concept. It's also super soft, like you're saying. Yeah, I mean they have their advantages as soft frogs do. The Slither K is the one I'm thinking of.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that. I don't think I've ever thrown the depths one though.
It's a $21 frog. So
Ridiculous.
yeah, don't lose that one.
Yeah, I fish
Anyways.
around a bunch of pike being from up north, so you really have to decide what you're willing to lose. Usually you keep all your good stuff for tournament day and then throw all the like booyah pad crafters during practice and stuff.
Don't be throwing that one around the pike.
Yeah.
You get that thing tore up. But anyway, so back to your day one. So on day one, were most of your fish coming off of the let's see, you said you made that transition and caught those bigger fish around the grass in the back of that pocket. Was that using the jerkbait technique that you're talking about, or was that on coming on a frog?
Yeah, the bigger ones were on the jerkbait,
Okay.
but day one was so crucial for the whole rest of the tournament because I started getting that frog idea in my mind. And then come day two, and then especially day three, I really went more to the frog over the jerkbait. But
Yeah.
the jerkbait was a huge player on day one and day two. Day two, I caught my two biggest fish on the jerkbait again.
Wow. I guess I kind of forgot to ask, what kind of water temperature were you guys seeing throughout the event, and how was the weather kind of playing a factor in day one?
It was right around like 60 to 65,
Okay.
pretty much from through practice and the tournament. It fluctuated a little bit. We had some cold nights during
Yeah.
practice,
I think
but
it
then
dropped down to like the high 30s, 40s at night, during that time, but
during the beginning of practice it did, and the bite was like legit. And then it got warmer overnight and it never cooled back off. It stayed warmer all through the tournament. And so day one of the tournament, I figured it would be tougher than the other 2 days, because it was very little wind, bright skies, and
yeah,
it
post
was,
frontal type of condition,
yeah, it was
or
like recovering from that the cold nights. And
yeah.
then day two, the clouds rolled in because there was a little rain shower coming through on Friday.
Yeah.
So, 3 quarters of day two was cloudy, and then all of day three was cloudy. And that helped the bite a lot, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So do you think they kind of positioned in that grass a little better for you on like in the next coming days, or how did day two go for you? Let's go through that.
Day two was like my whole tournament was made each of the days from some very specific fish catch. And so
Yeah.
on day two, I had 85 and a half inches, and
Slightly
I
better. It looked like every day you got better as you're out there.
But about 9 o'clock, I just had a small limit. And 9 o'clock is when the clouds rolled over, like I was saying.
Yeah.
This is on day two.
Yeah.
And so I caught a 19-incher on the jerkbait right when the clouds came over because it had been sunny in the morning. And then 5 minutes later, I culled up another time with an 18 and three quarters. And
Wow.
that's what jumped me up there real high for my daily total. And then I kind of just went practicing after that again, ran a bunch of new water, and then really got keyed in on that frog bite and ended up culling a couple more times with the frog, but they were just, you know, a quarter inch or maybe an inch here and there. But I knew like what I was going to do on day three, how I was going to potentially win. I knew I'd have to fish the frog really heavily. So, then
so
I
what
ran.
Do you think made that transition from like having to fish the jerk bait versus the frog? Like, why do you think they started keying in on that better?
Well, for some reason, the bait kind of went down. I don't know if they went deeper or kind of dispersed a little bit. So the fish were not blowing up on them like they were through practice and day one of the tournament. So I think that was a huge factor in the reason I couldn't really get the jerkbait to play that much. But there were still bait up in the grass, and they're like the matted grass, not necessarily the just the submerged grass, and also bluegills back in there. So I couldn't really get anything going on the jerkbait. So I just started throwing the frog more heavily, and that
like around some of the matted grass, more so than like the submerged or sparse grass.
Yep.
Okay. That's awesome. I like hearing that.
Yeah, I like me a good frog bite for sure.
Yeah, what kind of setup do you throw for your frog fishing?
I have like a 7.3
okay.
heavy, you know, pretty typical frog rod. And then I throw Shimano everything, and on that I have a 200K. I really like the little beefier reel. And it's also a high speed gear ratio.
Yeah, I like the high speed, especially in a kayak. I like fishing high speed gear ratios.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, you gotta, when you're fishing a frog or anything that you're working, I think especially out of a kayak, you have to have a fast gear ratio, because I can never catch up with them fast enough.
I can never catch up with my slack, or I feel like I get wore out trying to catch up with my slack or just the fish in general. Always, basically, I feel like I'm always moving towards the bait and having to pick up line. That's a good size reel, 200. I started using the the baits reels, the 150 size, and I really like those ones too. They got a real like a longer crank handle on them, so they make high speed gear ratios in those too. But I really feel I can like winch them out of the cover and stuff with that.
Yeah,
pretty well. What kind of line do you throw? Or what size?
I like Power Pro. I feel like it's a really round line, and I have always really liked the round lines, whereas like spider wire is more flat. And then I like 50 pound for my frogs. I know that's a little light for some guys, but
I think that's pretty good. I think they can get the job done out there. I go down as low as 30 pounds sometimes with that Kyair frog. That's the only one I really throw on that lighter braid.
Because
I feel like sometimes it's kind of hard. Yeah, sometimes I feel like it's kind of hard to cast that little frog on 50 pound. It just like, it's so light that it just like catches the wind and it just doesn't move. It just like stalls in the midair. So I feel like I have to throw it on 30 pound to get it anywhere.
And when you're fishing that finesse, the, you know, the Jackal Cara, that more finesse frog, you're doing it because the bite is tough for whatever reason. And so a lot of times you have to make that really long cast in order to get the fish to bite. So going down to like 30 pound is a really good idea.
You just got to be careful with it around that grass if you get dug into it. And luckily, though, in a kayak, you can kind of like just kind of pin them in the grass and make your way over to them and not really have to like winch them out of it. So you're not really like in a bass boat, for example, you'd really have to like winch them out of it, and be able to use the boat to kind of pull them out. Versus within a kayak, you can kind of just hold them in place and hope they don't come off, basically.
Yeah, a kayak is a lot more forgiving than a bass boat. Like when you set the hook in a bass boat, the boat doesn't move, you know. But when
Yeah,
you set the hook in
you're
a
a more you're
kayak,
standing one, so you're putting a lot more force into the
mm-hmm.
hook set. And two, yeah, like you're not gonna move as much, so again, you're putting a lot more force into that set. Yeah. So 30 pound, I think you can get away with in a kayak. I don't know if I would recommend bass boat guys doing that, but
Yeah, I would
maybe
say
if they
you
really knew what
definitely
they're
could
doing.
do in a kayak.
Yeah. So day two, you had a pretty decent limit. Let's see, you had 85.5 inches. There's some pretty good limits caught on day two, though. I think the best limit of the event was caught on day two, it looks like. Yeah.
Like 93 inches or something.
Yeah, 93.25 inches. Justin Rolando had 90 inches with a 24 in his bag. Is that big fish for the event?
Yep, it sure was.
Nice.
It's a monster.
He's a hammer, man.
He likes those
Always seems
big
to catch
fish.
those big ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. I'm gonna try to pull it up on the screen here.
There were some absolute freaks caught down there.
Yeah, this is
Second biggest fish
pretty.
was like 23 and a half, I believe.
Yeah, that's a pretty solid one.
Yeah.
23.5. Where was that one at?
That was Dusty Yacker. I think he caught that on day one.
Day one.
Yeah. And then I really liked Nick Matthews, 21 and three quarters that he caught on day one. It was a really pretty fish and it was a tank.
Good Lord. Yeah, that's one of those cool fish with the little black spots and stuff on them.
Yeah, and it was like yellow. It was a weird
Huh.
fish. I think he caught it with like 5 minutes left or something.
Jesus. How did he get all that blood all over it? He get it kind of hooked in the tongue a little bit or something.
Yeah, he was throwing a jerk bait, I think, and I think it inhaled it. So
Oh, dang.
he said it swam away.
Yeah, it looked like it wasn't like gushing blood everywhere, but it definitely had some good blood on it. That's awesome. Yeah, that's a good one. What was the other one you said? A 21.
He's up, yep, right there, 21 and a half. This is a
That
really
one?
pretty fish, yep.
Oh yeah, that's like
It's got the
the
really
lateral
thick,
line on it's really defined.
yeah, it's a beautiful, I mean, it's fat too.
That's cool.
Rocking the
Good ones.
jeans with no shoes on.
Yeah.
Just a good old boy from Indiana.
Yeah. And there's are those Birkenstocks up there?
Yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah. Awesome. Nice. So 85.5. So what'd that have you sitting at in after day two? I don't know
Fifth.
if it shows the totals after like.
Yeah, if you scroll up and go to like total right there by day one, yeah. Oh, shoot. Yeah, I
Yeah.
guess I know what you're talking about.
Like
It doesn't show
what
you
place
after
were
day
you
two.
in day two at the
Yeah.
end of the day, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I was in fifth going into day three, and I was 10 inches back. I had 168, and Justin had 178.
Wow.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
That's a pretty good gap. But I mean, there's still chance, especially like with as much swinging and the weather and stuff that happens out there, it's kind of hard to produce that kind of, like, especially that limit that he put up, that 93 and a quarter. It's hard to produce that 2 days in a row.
Yeah. When the average card people are catching is like between 75 and 80 inches, and people are also catching 24 inches in the tournament, like any moment you could be just right back in it.
Oh yeah. So did you have like some confidence going into day three that you could potentially jump him, or how were you feeling, like, game plan wise? What were you thinking?
I wasn't really like too worked up or anything. I never really was thinking, man, I just need this and this. And I knew I had a shot to win. But I knew I was going to have to move a lot. I knew that my starting area was not going to win the tournament because I'd already taken several decent fish out of there, and I knew I needed at least one kicker, like a 20 plus.
Yeah.
So I kind of planned to just fish my starting spot for a little while till I kind of felt like I needed to run, and did that, and actually caught a 17 and three quarters. And shortly after that, I could just kind of feel like that area was about done. So I loaded up in the car and ran to another area I'd practiced in on day two of the tournament after I kind of got my good limit. And went over there and just started frog fishing.
Nice. So you made a midday move to this other spot. Did you call up any when you got over there, or how did that go once you started fishing that area?
Yeah, so I probably left at like 9:30 and went to that next spot, and I had two fish when I moved. I had I had a 13 incher and a 17 and three quarters. And I went over there and caught two more 13s, and then my fifth fish was a 21 and three quarters on the frog. Yeah. But up until then, I had not caught a 20 incher in the tournament. So I really needed that kicker fish. And then after I caught that one, I just got really dialed into what was going on with the frog fishing. And
look at all that purple, man.
Yeah. Like, damn.
That's awesome. So that was your kicker that you had that you're looking for. You hadn't really caught a kicker like that in the previous days. So that really kind of shot you up there, made the difference for you for sure.
Yeah. When I caught this fish, I knew that I was like pretty dang close to being able to pull something off. I knew I was going to have, you know, like another kicker like that, or just call up with some pretty decent fish, like some 17s or something.
Yeah. Yeah, those aren't bad.
When I caught that 21 and three quarters, I believe I had like around 246 inches, and Jordan Marshall was leading with 251 and three quarters. So, and I had three 13 inchers in my card. So, you know, I'm like, man, I'm really close to him.
Yeah, you're right there.
Yeah.
So were you watching the leaderboard at all, or were you getting like, were people texting you, kind of giving you updates and kind of like hyping you up or anything? Or
when I wasn't really getting any text messages, but when I was at my starting area and only had two fish, yeah, I kind of glanced at the leaderboard to see, you know, should I kind of ride it out here or do I need to go make a move and catch some kickers? And when I saw, like, even when I had two fish, I was doing the math and I was like, man, people are not catching them today. I mean, the leader had like 73 inches for the day. So
yeah,
I was thinking, shoot, like, we better go catch our limit and see how we end up here. And so I made that move and then just increasingly got more excited as I would catch some upgrades because I knew I was getting close. And I actually did all of my, after that 21 three quarters, I think I did like the majority of my upgrading after the leaderboard shut off. So okay, nobody knew that I was upgrading except AJ and myself.
Yeah, like the judges and yep, all that. That's awesome. That's even more exciting that you just kind of came out of left field. I mean, what did you say you were again at the end of day two?
Fifth.
Yeah. Going from fifth to jumping up to first in the last like couple like hours. That's awesome.
It was pretty exciting. They definitely went bananas there at the end of the day. The fish did.
Yeah. Did they start like schooling, or what was happening at the end of the day there? That
there were some schooling fish back in this marina that I had not found in practice. I just kind of randomly happened upon them as I was running from spot to spot, trying to like go back to fish that I'd missed on the frog earlier in the day. And I caught a 15 and a half, which is like ended up being the small fish on my card. Just randomly going by and seeing those schooling fish. But the fish just like whatever the conditions were doing to the fish, it just got them right for frog fishing. And they were inhaling the frog. I was catching them in the mat though. I wasn't pulling it over top of the grass like I had been the previous 2 days.
Yeah. So they had moved further into the mats, or the ones that were there just got more active for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think maybe they got more active because, you know, when you're frog fishing, you're kind of just sitting in one area and picking it apart. So when I'm doing that, I'm just like surveying the mat. And you could see some bluegill getting popped out of the mat more often as the day went on. And I kind of take a mental note of where those bluegill or bait were getting moved around and go back to three or four times until you finally just irritated that fish into coming up for your frog.
Wow. And was that the same frog that you'd been throwing in previous days, or did you have to change frogs to fish that heavier vegetation at all, or
what was your I was throwing the jackal, and I caught that 21 three quarters on it, but then I did actually switch to like a little heavier frog.
Yeah.
Just to like
be able to push down on that mat a little better.
And I think that helped for sure.
Yeah. That's kind of what that launch frog that Lee Livesey won with, that was kind of the same reason I think he was using that, was that one, he can gas bomb that thing out there, and two, it like kind of actually, it sits down in the mat a little better. And you can add weights and stuff to it. I mean, you can do that to any frog, but
yeah, I remember him talking about he would put like drop shot weights or something in there.
Yeah.
Make it even heavier. And what I do sometimes, if I'm just being lazy, is I'll just reach down and hold my frog with my finger and thumb and then put in the water and let it fill up with water.
And, yeah. That's a good move.
that makes it heavier as well, especially if you're just like have one small area of really thick stuff and you don't want to
have to deal with putting weights in and out of it. Yeah, that's smart. I feel like not too many people think to do that. And that's a really easy way to make your frog heavier on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on which one, because some of them have those big holes in the back that you can't really do that with it.
Yeah.
It just goes right out of it. But that's pretty awesome, man, that the last like 2 hours is you made it happen.
It was one of those like special moments that you have when you win a tournament, and everything just went right the entire tournament. I didn't lose fish, which you can't lose fish and win big tournaments. Things just happened at the opportune time, like catching the 19 and 18 and 3/4 pretty much on back-to-back cast on day two, kind of figuring out the frog thing on day one, and then on day three, just getting in the right area at the right time and catching the kicker that I needed so bad, and then just finishing it out with some really important like 1-2 inch coals at the end of the day. It was really special. It was really awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool. And a really cool feeling. So going into the award ceremony and all that, how were you feeling like leading up to that and sitting at the ceremony?
When I got off the water, I didn't know if I wanted to like go to sleep or throw up or like I was starving all at the same time. It was a pretty stressful few hours. Yeah.
I mean, but, you had to be kind of wore out at that point. I mean, you've been fishing almost a week straight, like every day on the water.
I was tired, and I would just tell my mom earlier, like, I don't know why I've been so hungry since we got home, but she's like, you hardly ate anything when I was there. And I thought, oh yeah, I kind of didn't eat anything. And I actually ended up losing like 3 or 4 pounds during the week of fishing, just because
we were
so locked in to practice and to fish the tournament. But
you're probably like losing water weight, dehydrated, and not eating anything. Running on pure caffeine and adrenaline.
Yeah. And then the stress of waiting those few hours to figure out if you won the freaking TOC was horrible. But
yeah,
I felt pretty decent that I was, sitting pretty after the leaderboard shut off and then the tournament got over. I had a pretty good idea, but I didn't want to let myself get too excited because I'd have really stunk if somebody else had upgraded, which would definitely have been possible.
Yeah, for sure. Like, did you think that you were going to win it at that point, or did you just think you were going to have a really good finish?
I thought I had a really good shot at winning it. I wasn't positive I'd won it yet, but I was pretty sure I had a really good shot.
I think... Yeah, and looking at the leaderboard, you're one of the only ones that like consistently got better through the event. Mostly everybody either had a really good day one and day two and then dropped off on day three, or the other way around. They had a bad day one, and then day two and three, they kind of got it figured out. But it seemed like every day for you got better each day.
Yeah, I just kind of kept moving around and trying some new areas and trying areas I've been to, but at different times of the day, until, I just kind of kept putting the pieces of the puzzle together and was able to just get the opportune, put the opportune bites in the boat when they bit was really the key.
Yeah. I mean, you got some pretty good gas money out of the deal. So how does it feel when they called your name, or like when you were the last one up there?
Well, my heart was racing. Like, I don't even know how to tell you how hard my heart was beating when it was Jordan and I standing up there waiting to figure out who won. And then as soon as AJ said that I won, like, I just lost all the feelings of wanting to throw up or whatever. And then my heart stopped beating and I was just like calm and peaceful. But
yeah,
having fished, you know, I'm still really young in my age, but having fished tournaments for so long now, the TOC has been the highest thing on my list of wanting to, for one, getting to it every year, which is always the goal, and then winning it is the ultimate goal. And to, you know, see these people I fished with forever get a win it in the previous years and been so happy for them and just got to be a part of like that excitement. And then getting to hold that trophy now was, I don't know, it just kind of came full circle from when I first heard about kayak fishing and Mr. Evans's health class in junior high till standing at Chickamauga holding a dang trophy over my head.
That's kind of crazy, that all that development and looking back on that.
Pretty surreal. I still don't really believe it.
Well, you did it, man. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And in the process, I mean, you beat out some guys that are hammers in general, but also have a history of doing really well on that lake. Like, Jordan says he hates that lake, but I know he's this past year or so, he's done, I think he's won like 3 or 4 big events out there, placed really well in them.
Yeah.
And then Russ, I mean, he won the Bassmaster Classic Championship out there earlier this year.
Just to see your name up there with the likes of Russ and Jordan Marshall, I mean, that's kind of an accomplishment in its own, because those guys are like they're world class competitors, and that just makes it all that more special.
Well, I mean, really almost everybody in that event is world class. And then you had Ewing, congrats to him also, with the AOI win there. That's pretty cool. Another young guy. I mean, he's a freaking hammer for his age.
Yeah. I think he's younger than I am.
I think he's still in college or something. Yeah, I guess so.
He's tearing it up in the college fishing too.
Wild. I don't want to see that guy on the water in 5 years. He's probably going to be dominating. So anyways, pretty awesome that you're able to make that accomplishment. You got anybody you want to thank or any kind of sponsors or anything or family?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I've been kayak fishing for a long time now, and I've met some really awesome people and gotten to become friends with so many amazing people, and just everyone that has been a part of this journey, like this whole feeling and trophy and the title is just as much theirs as it is mine, because I could not do it without my folks and all these different people that, you know, I've competed against in Nebraska. Shout out to the Sticks. Like, everybody's just made me better. And we're actually opening, or we're taking over, a Hobie kayak dealership this coming year. So that'll be in Nebraska. And I've worked with them for several years, and they've sponsored me, and that's been really awesome. Mike and Don are their names, and we'll be taking that over probably like in December. So be looking for that if you, you know, need any advice with kayaks or anything to do with kayaks. You can always just call me, and I'll chit chat kayaks or fishing or whatever. But
really cool.
We'll have an online shop at some point as well. So looking forward to that. But
I'm pretty excited about that new color that they've got out, that the AOI boat was. Mm-hmm.
That's legit, huh?
Yeah.
I like that a
I like
lot.
those darker colors. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sucks that I just bought a new 360 like earlier this year.
Yeah.
And I
How
should
you
have
like
waited.
it?
I like it pretty well. It's been a pretty, I mean, I've had a 360 for 4 years now. Three or four years, whatever, however long it's. I think I got it the year after it came out, but it's a pretty awesome boat. You can kind of do a little bit of everything with it, and it's fast and stable. Carry way too much stuff.
Me too, man.
Probably needed to start taking stuff out of it because it's just
Yeah.
like distracting how much stuff I've got.
Right. Do you have any sort of motor on it?
Yeah, I got it the Newport, the 180, not the 300. That's a little smaller one, but it pushes it just fine, and I can push it. I mean, ridiculous range on that thing, like cover. I don't know. On average, I guess I'll usually go about 10 or 11 miles a day, in it.
Heck yeah.
And
That's what's
at
up.
about 4.5 to 5 miles an hour,
Yeah.
I start pedaling with it and really and leave it on like 100% throttle. I can get like 5.5 or so, almost six. But it's a pretty cool boat. I really like it. I have considered some of the newer options though out there. Like the shop just got the new Titan X's in. And I've been looking at those pretty closely because I like the build on those. Those are pretty cool.
Yeah.
It originally was in a Titan before I switched to the Hobie. And yeah, that was my one thing I didn't like about the Titan was it was kind of a slower kayak at the time. But that seems like they've kind of got that fixed a little and the whole feet wet. Feet live
Yeah.
well issue.
I remember that. So what like drive system do you prefer? Do you like the bicycle pedal or do you like the push from the Hobies?
I like the push, like the fin style one on the Hobie, a little better because I feel like it just I don't get as wore out using that, and it's faster. Than like the prop style and the pedal style. But the one thing I do like about the pedal more is that instant
Yeah.
reverse with it. Like you can immediately start pedaling backwards and you're going backwards. But rather than having to pull something or turn something to get in reverse.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why Midway USA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Yeah, after you've had a Hobie for a while, that just kind of becomes like second nature, like turning the 360 knob or like pulling the reverse button or cord. You don't even like think about it after a certain time.
I feel like I'm just very uncoordinated sometimes, and like I'll be like trying to fight a fish and trying to turn my handle around and mess that all up. But yeah, like you're saying, it just kind of it's like it becomes muscle memory at some point after you've done it for a while. Good boats, yeah.
Yep.
They got some cool new stuff coming out.
Good way to get out on the water without breaking the bank.
Yeah. In comparison to boats, at least. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're definitely expensive, but yeah. Once, you know, you sure work, you know, work a couple extra shifts, save up some money, drop the $4,000 or $3,000 to get in a used boat, and then you have your fishing vessel. You don't have to put gas in it. You don't mm-hmm. have to maintain it. You don't have to winterize it. It's just a piece of plastic that sits there and goes wherever you tell it to go. So
yeah. And you got almost all the same capabilities that you could in a boat, almost. I mean, with the exception of like going 70 miles an hour mm-hmm. or being able to like have more stuff on the boat, I guess. But like they're basically miniature bass boats at this point.
Yep.
Or like really high, those high end John boats almost, like mm-hmm. that have all the stuff on them. It's like kind of the same fishing capabilities as you can get in some of that stuff.
Yeah. I feel like I catch more fish out of my kayak than I do when I'm fishing with my friends in a boat. It's just a lot quieter. And then also if you're sitting down, it just seems like you get way more bites than if you're standing up.
Yeah. Those are your presence is not as, trying to say there, like you're not as impeding in the water mm-hmm. as you would be in a boat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you're standing in a boat, when you're standing up, it looks like a dang bird coming down to try to spear them out of the water. So if you're sitting down, they can't even see you.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some advantages to it. Overall, I appreciate having you on too. I was going to say that.
Dude, thanks for having me on. I really like doing these podcasts, getting to meet new guys. I don't know if they've met before, so.
No, we'll have to catch up sometime. I'm hoping, I just had a baby.
Oh, dang, congrats.
3 months ago, so my fishing time and season has been drastically reduced.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping next year to get out to a couple of events. I'm gonna have to be a little selective on what I get to do next year, but mm-hmm. At least until he starts like sleeping better and getting a little, I mean, he's never really gonna be independent for a while, but a little more independent and not having to be constantly attended to. But yeah, I'm hoping to make it to a couple more national events. Did Hobie release their schedule?
Yep, they're coming to check next year in September. So
yeah, let's pull that up real quick because I have forgot about that. They did it during the event, right?
Yep, they dropped that during the event. So looks like a pretty legit schedule, especially if you are into chasing those big ones. Start with the Harris chain, go to Rayburn in February. Got some Alabama bass he can go chase on Logan Martin in March.
Where did they? Oh, here we go. So Harris chain, is that? No. This is a 2023 one that I got here.
They started at Harris chain this year, and they'll start at Harris chain next year too.
Next year? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's one I've always wanted to try to do. I don't know if that'll be on my radar for next year, but that'd be pretty cool.
That place
I've always wanted to try to make one Florida event in the spring for them.
Yeah, January. Yeah,
yeah. No,
I mean, last year Ewing caught like what 108 or 104 or something. I think it was like 108. I don't know. It was freaking ridiculous.
Stupid.
Though. One day.
They had to do it one day event for that,
that
one.
That was Santee Cooper.
Santee Cooper, my bad. Mm-hmm. My bad. Where can I find that out? On their Facebook page, I guess.
Yeah. It's like a blue hue to it this year. So shouldn't be too many posts back. And I don't know much about this Texas lake they're going to, like Wright Patman or something, but you would figure that there'd be some big ones down there.
Pretty much every Texas lake, it seems like. I don't know that I've ever fished Wright Patman or know too much about it.
That's I don't even know where it is, honestly.
All right, I'm going to look that up too.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the schedule as well. Oh, yeah, it's AJ posted it, and it's down the list quite a ways in Hobie Bass Open Series.
Yeah, that may be why I didn't see it. There was a couple days I was pretty busy last week. I got kind of lost in the feed there.
Yeah, around TOC, there's always a lot of
there it is
going on.
All right, I'm going to share my screen here. We might have to do a whole nother show on their schedule. But we got Harris Chain. This is kind of cool how they're doing it, like round one. I like that blue, too. Did they do 8 events this year?
They did 9. So they're going to drop back to 8 next year, and then they'll also go back to the like three for AOY.
That is the lake I'm thinking of. I think Wright Patman is a nuclear or a power plant lake.
Yeah. All right.
I think so. I can't remember if that's the one I'm thinking of or not. Maybe there's some on Wikipedia. So we got, after that, Sam Rayburn, they got Logan Martin, like Norman, Wright Patman, Cayuga, Saginaw River and Bay, Chickamauga in September, and then Santee Cooper. So they're kind of spreading the love a little bit on this one. They're kind of all over the U.S.
They have like that northern swing going for Cayuga and Saginaw. I've never been to either, but obviously people love Cayuga. Then I would imagine Saginaw has some pretty wicked smallmouth being up there in Michigan, but I really don't know
for sure. I don't know if I've ever been to Saginaw River, but I mean they've gotta have some big fish up. Big smallmouth up there.
There's not much going on in the schedule this year for the like if you're trying to get your river fix, but Logan Martin is on the Coosa River and there's some very rivery parts to it that you can get on and fish, you know, if you're kind of a creek guy. So and I think everybody should go down to Alabama and catch those Coosa River spots. They are, I like catching them more than smallmouth even. They are
really
fun and mean. Oh, yeah. And that should be a good time. Like, it should be, I'm sure there will be weather move in, but you'll still be able to catch big ones.
Yeah, for sure. I live close enough. I should have done it by now, but I hadn't actually fished for any Coosa spots yet.
Oh, man. I love my largemouth, but Coosa River spots are very close up there to being my favorite bass to catch.
Yeah, that's something I need to put on my radar here soon.
Heck yeah. Get down there in March.
I'm thinking about it now. March may be a little busy for me. We'll see. We'll see if I can make it work. I hope I can make some of these work. At the very least, I think Chickamauga may be one I may try towards the end of that season.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it'd be kind of cool to go up to Michigan. That's my wife's family is all from Michigan. I don't know how far that is from where they're at.
Nice.
Saginaw River. Is that on the east coast of Michigan?
I don't know. I've never actually fished in Michigan.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's like 10 hours away or 10 to 12 hours away from me, so I can see why I haven't, but.
Yeah, it is on that little part of the mitten there. That section right there.
Mm-hmm.
The thumb part.
I wonder how in the world you, like, set boundaries for that.
You can't go into Canada for this one. I'd say they probably have a launch list, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they just do the launches and then you can go as far as way as you can pedal, but yeah,
I don't know if I'd venture too far out,
right?
Like the ocean out there.
Yeah, that looks not very kayak friendly if the wind
yeah goes.
But considering they're in Saginaw Bay there, like, even if the wind is, like, blowing, it looks like there's some protection that you can find behind some of those little islands and jetties and things.
Depending on the wind direction. I think that this, a northwest wind going this direction will be pretty brutal through there.
Yeah. Hopefully it doesn't blow. I imagine
happens pretty frequently, but anyways.
They'll figure it out.
Yeah. Well, it's about that time. It's kind of towards the end of our show here. I appreciate having you on and getting to talk with you. It's really cool to hear your story of how you were able to take home this win and beat out all these other hammers.
Yeah, it was a fun thing to live for sure. I'm sure glad that it all went down like it did. I'm glad it was a tough tournament, made it really worth it.
There were still a lot of fish caught. So, I mean, you had 60 anglers and 1,000 fish over 3 days. What does that come out to? Average. That's 17 fish per angler, so that's over five fish a day per angler. I mean, not everybody caught five fish a day, but
yeah, some people made up for it.
Yeah, there's definitely a few that made up for it, it seemed like. But that's really cool, man. Congratulations again.
Thank you so much.
What do you got next? I guess most of everybody's season's wrapped up now. This is kind of the last big event of the year.
We're just getting the shop ready, gonna hopefully open here in the next month or so, we'll be carrying some other stuff like tackle and offer some different services like rod and reel repair, so I'll be kind of wrapped up in that. I don't know how much I'll be able to fish next year, but anytime I can, I'm going to get away for some tournaments. I'll definitely be fishing around here in my local club in Nebraska, and then maybe try to do some All-American tournaments, All-American Tag Series up here in the Midwest.
Yeah.
They run a tight ship over there.
You're going to have to come back to Chick in September and defend your title.
I might. Yeah. I might. I wonder how it fishes then. I think it's probably a little more full, so it might fish a lot different.
Yeah, I think that's still summer pool out there. I think they start drawing it down at the end of October or mid-October or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe it's like the first week of October is when they try to get it to winter pool, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
Anyways. Well, it was good having you on, man. And for everybody listening out there, it's good talking with Brady here, and wish him best in his his career, I guess, with the your new shop coming up and your future tournament stuff. So with that,
appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Well, with that, we'll see you guys on the next one.
Heck yeah.
I'm Will Cooper, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. If you haven't already, download the free Waypoint TV app to listen to our podcast and watch the original films from Hunt Stand Presents anywhere, anytime, and on any device.
On Mondays, head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep-sea adventures.
Coming to me.
Double. He's jumping.
Oh!
Look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way.
On Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.